It was just over a year ago that Kenya's disputed presidential election led to widespread rioting along tribal lines. The two leading candidates eventually reached a power-sharing agreement. There's still tension between them, and many ordinary Kenyans say the wounds from last year's fighting still have not healed. NPR's Gwen Tompkins has more.
On the face of it, not much has changed at the Boys to Men barbershop in Nairobi. It's still in Kibera, the world's second largest slum. And it's still full on a Saturday afternoon with working men getting the works. Three barbers are shaping three heads right now, the bygone memories of afros collecting at their feet. They're talking barbershop talk, girls, politics, money, politics, sports, and of course, politics. But something has changed. The guys aren't as optimistic as they used to be. Nesto Amisi is a barber here.
We are trying to build our life to normal, but not normal the way it was before election.
There's more than hair down at the heels in this shop, and indeed across Kenya. Just over a year ago, the rickety wooden benches here were overflowing with people, eagerly awaiting the results of Kenya's presidential race. There was a rare television set on the shelf, and the Kenyan Electoral Commission was on screen, counting votes. The commission eventually called the race for the incumbent, Mwai Kibaki, a candidate from the Kikuyu tribe. But Amisi says he and most everyone here bet on the other guy, Raila Odinga, the candidate from the Luo tribe.
When we are waiting for the result, they announced the wrong person. It caused everything.
Riots erupted here outside the barbershop. Looting, rape, murder. Kibera and many other areas of Kenya burned. In the end, more than 1,000 people died and hundreds of thousands were displaced in ethnic violence. Eventually, Kibaki and Odinga shook hands and agreed to share power. Together, they vowed to steer Kenya's 42 tribes out of the embers. But out west, there are still dead bodies at the morgue, and nationwide, there are still food shortages because so many crops were destroyed or never got planted. What's more, Elvis Odoyo says the ethnic rifts that were exposed by the election have lingered.
It was hell. I mean, and most Kenyans now, they're like, none of them has forgiven each other. Their perception is that it's only Raila and Kibaki who shook their hands.
A year ago, Odoyo was an accountant at a local insurance company, but his company folded. He now runs a rival barbershop in Kibera that doesn't get half the business that Boys to Men does. Would you want an accountant to cut your hair?
I learned.
Like most Luos, Odoyo still believes the Kikuyus stole the election. But he and his fellow Luo merchants say Kenya's best way forward is to forget what happened. Joseph Agunga Juma is a tailor in the stall next door. He says he lost two sewing machines to looters.
You've got to forgive and forget. Your yesterday doesn't determine your tomorrow.
But if you did know who did it...
Yeah, we'd work on him one-on-one.
What does that mean?
I wouldn't forgive.
Where forgiveness is not possible in Kenya, justice may have to do. The coalition has begun moving toward the creation of a tribunal to prosecute the ringleaders of last year's violence. A list of names of those believed to have coordinated the violence, including some top officials, is now in a sealed envelope at the United Nations headquarters here. And mediator Kofi Annan says the list will go to the International Criminal Court if the tribunal fails to happen. In the Rift Valley, about an hour northwest of Nairobi, Raquel Kabora Kanyi says Kenyans need to see the consequences of their actions.
If the government decides not to bring these people to justice, then this problem will remain forever.
Kanyi is a Kikuyu farmer from a town north of Nairobi. Her husband, who was also Kikuyu, drove a commercial truck. But when the Kikuyu candidate took the oath of office, a mob of people from other tribes came to Kanyi's house and set it on fire. She and the children fled, and she expected her husband to follow. She later learned he'd been murdered. His body was dumped near a dam.
I was not able to bury my husband because the situation was so bad and people were just killed like dogs. There was no official burying.
Kanyi now lives in a row of fraying plastic tents on a dry spit of ground that she and several other families bought last year. They'd been living in a displacement camp for months, and the government paid them to move someplace else. But beyond owning the land, the people here don't have much with which to begin life anew. Most of them are Kikuyus, who as merchants or farmers don't have the capital to get back into business. They want more from their government. But former shopkeeper James Njoroge doubts that the coalition can deliver justice.
The coalition government came together and they forgot us, the common citizen. And now we are left behind. We are still in the tents. The condition here is in very bad shape.
Most of the displacement camps have closed, and the ethnic groups are separating of their own accord. People say it's safer to stick with their own kind. David Gikonyo is a Pentecostal minister who lives in another Kikuyu-dominated community near Nairobi. He says he has only to look at his wife to know that things will get better. She's from the Kalenjin tribe, which was known to commit many of the atrocities against Kikuyus and others in the Rift Valley. And while many intertribal marriages failed last year, he says he could never leave her.
For me, I think I cannot think of divorce. She was the only wife for me.
Gikonyo predicts that Kenya will one day be a nation of brotherly love, when Kikuyus are less Kikuyu, and Luos are less Luo, and Kalenjin are less Kalenjin. Maybe then, he says, everybody will be a little more Kenyan. Gwen Tompkins, NPR News, Nairobi.